Mr. K Super Show, a podcast for the discerning music and pop culture geek, hosted by Chris Carr. Welcome to Mr. K Super Show. I'm Chris Carr, and today we're going to be talking about a band that's celebrating its 40th anniversary this year. And of course, I'm talking about Dio, the band founded by legendary metal singer Ronnie James Dio. And to talk about that, we have somebody on the show again who's been a recurring guest over the last year or so. Despite his better judgment, he keeps coming back on the show. So, Alex Alt, welcome back.
Thanks for having me, Chris. I'm so excited to talk about the heavy metal behemoth that is Dio today.
You know, Ronnie James Dio may not have been a tall man, but for all his talent and his presence, he might as well have been 10 feet tall. Seriously.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I mean, you know, there's Dio, there's Black Sabbath, there's Rainbow, there's Elf, there's even stuff that goes back to the 1950s. I mean, you could do a Ronnie James Dio podcast alone just to cover the various phases of your career, and maybe we will at some point. But we're here to talk about Dio because this year is the 40th anniversary of Holy Diver, a landmark album, not just for Dio himself, but for just heavy metal. And before we get into that and we get into the history behind that, what is your Dio origin story, Alex?
I think for me, it started like a lot of these bands. Like, it started with watching VH1 Classic and seeing the videos for like Holy Diver and Rainbow in the Dark. Holy Diver is the first one I really remember. I remember knowing at the time, I knew the name. I knew he was the guy that replaced Ozzy and Sabbath. And then I got to see these solo videos. Like, oh, he's really good. He's got a great voice. He's like, sounds like very powerful. And these songs are catchy. So I knew that, like, you know, I was a budding heavy metal fan at the time. I was like, I need to get some Dio in my collection. So, you know, living in rural North Dakota, as I always say, there's not a lot of options, but I got the very Beast of Dio, as it was called. And it was this like 22 track collection. There were a lot of songs on there. And that was kind of my intro to Dio. I just fell in love with it. It covers the Warner Brother years. And I loved all those songs, his voice, his presence. One of my favorite things is, like, just he can say the simplest phrase or the simplest word and make it sound like the most important thing you've ever heard. It's so powerful. And like we kind of joked about, he's so small, but man, he's got so much fire and passion with the way he sings. And the band behind him, even on records after this, is always stellar, always tight.
Well, when you're Ronnie James Dio, you can get the best of the best. You're not going to get some second rate hack who's in a garage band. As for me, my origin story, I guess, would go back to 1981 when I bought Heaven and Hell by Black Sabbath, which was the band, of course, that he was in at the time. Later that year, they came out with Mob Rules, and I was, you know, instantly hooked. I mean, I love both Ozzy and Dio. I think they're both very distinctive. Yet, you're right. Ronnie can sing a gentle phrase like in a ballad or a slower paced song with great delicacy and sensitivity. And then he can, like, he'll just shred up his vocal cords, go, you know, and they both work. But I want to get to, of course, we're talking about Dio, and particularly Dio in the 80s, because that to me is when Dio, the band, was at its peak. That was like the magic years. And because in the 90s, he had new band members and people were coming in and out. It wasn't quite the same. Not that there wasn't some good music then. But we need to go back a little and do a little history here. In 1983, in January, Black Sabbath came out with their double live album, Live Evil. Well, no sooner do we get Live Evil do we also get the news that Ronnie James Dio was no longer in Black Sabbath. This was a shock. This was like, whoa, what happened? And, you know, we didn't really know, because this was back when, you know, you found out stuff and then you read about it 3 months later in like a magazine like Hit Parader or Circus. You know, this is not like now where everything is instantaneous and it's on the internet. But anyway, going back a little bit, Ronnie James Dio, of course, replaced Ozzy Osbourne and Black Sabbath in 1979. They released Heaven and Hell in 1980 and then Mob Rules in 81. And by the summer of 1982, they announced they were going to come out with a double live record called Live Evil. Well, Ozzy Osbourne heard about this and decided, I'm going to come out with my own double live album of Black Sabbath songs. And that was Speak of the Devil, which was released in, I believe, November of 1982. But so apparently during this time, especially during the mixing of Live Evil, the relationship between Ronnie James Dio and founding Black Sabbath members Tony Iommi and Geezer Butler disintegrated, to say the least. And, you know, there were accusations that Ronnie was coming in on, you know, to mix the album and mixing up his vocals at the, you know, and, the, you know, Iommi and Butler were being told one thing, Dio was being told another, and it was kind of ugly. And I guess for all intents and purposes, Ronnie James Dio was, quote, fired from Black Sabbath. But Ronnie wasted no time. As soon as he got his marching orders, he took Vinnie Appice, who would replace Bill Ward on drums with him. They were both New York Italians. And he says, you know, and Vinnie was, you know, didn't hesitate to join Ronnie because they got along really well. Anyway, they decided to put together a band. And Ronnie, you know, as he put it, he decided to call the band Dio because, well, no one's can fire me from a band called Dio. And, you know, he, yeah, it's true. He said that. And, you know, he had, as he put it, he was playing, he always sang in other people's bands, whether it be Ritchie Blackmore and Rainbow or Tony Iommi and Black Sabbath. So he was going to be the master of his own fate. And to that end, they auditioned guitar players out in California. They were situated in Los Angeles. Among the guitar players they auditioned was one Jake E. Lee, of course, who would soon after that would join Ozzy Osbourne's band. And that's another story for another time. Ronnie decided that he wanted a British guitar player because he, quote, British guitar players have a certain romance in their souls. So he and Vinnie went over to England, and they rung up an old friend of Ronnie's named Jimmy Bain. Now, Jimmy Bain was the bassist for Rainbow on the Rainbow Rising album. And of course, that was the band Ronnie was in, Ritchie Blackmore's Rainbow in 1976. So he called him up, said, you know, do you know any guitar players? And he tipped him off to this guy, Vivian Campbell, who was playing in a band at the time, I believe was called Sweet Savage. I don't think they ever really emerged much in this country. Anyway, they brought in Vivian for an audition. He passed with flying colors. And the interesting thing was that Jimmy Bain decided to install himself as the bass player. Ronnie didn't ask him to join the band. You know, and so Ronnie went to Vinnie at one point, says, how do you feel about Jimmy being the bass player? Because obviously being the drummer, they're going to be the, you know, the rhythm section. And Vinnie was fine with it. And, you know, they all got along. And they decided that was going to be the band. So the band was formed. And Ronnie decided, in the interest of taking things under control, he was going to produce the record as well. And this led to a very kind of amusing little anecdote that Ronnie talked about in an interview about 20 years ago. At one point, he got a call from somebody at Warner Brothers Records. Now, it bears noting that when Black Sabbath re-signed their record deal in 1982, Warner Brothers offered Ronnie James Dio a solo contract as well. So he left Black Sabbath having a record contract in hand. So he starts recording the record. He's, you know, I think they recorded at Sound City in California. Anyway, he gets a call from somebody at the record company. You know, we're getting bills here for this record. Who's producing it? We said, well, we didn't approve that, so you're going to have to come in and talk to someone. They set up a meeting with Ronnie and his wife, Wendy, who was his manager, with Ted Templeman, who was not only a, you know, producer, but he was also like a vice president and A&R guy at Warner Brothers. So they set up an appointment for 10 o'clock in the morning. Well, Ronnie was in the studio till like 4 in the morning, but he said, but nevertheless, you know, draped in their leathers and whatever they were wearing from the night before, they got into Ted Templeman's office for the 10 o'clock appointment. 10 o'clock shows, Ted Templeman isn't even there. Finally, about 10:30, Ted Templeman scraggles in and goes, oh, hey, Ronnie, what's going on? He goes, well, you tell me, you know, they called me and said, when you talk, they, you know, it's about my record and they want to know who's producing. He goes, well, who's producing it? And Ronnie says, I am. Ted Templeman says, well, go finish your record then. And that was it. You know? Yeah. I mean, all this hullabaloo, and Ted Templeman just kind of like shrugged it off like it was nothing, like, whatever. I guess he had faith in Ronnie.
Yeah.
As well he should have, because the record that comes out as a result of this, you know, like I said earlier, it's not merely just a great heavy metal hard rock album. It's just it's a great heavy metal hard rock album. But it's also a great album for Ronnie James Dio. It's definitely a great declaration of intent. And, of course, I'm talking about Holy Diver, which was released on May 25th, 1983, produced by Ronnie, as we said. So, Alex, I'm going to turn the microphone over to you, and you tell me what your impression is of Holy Diver.
Man, this is a way to start off, like, a new career. Like, it's amazing because, like, I think I was thinking about this as I was listening to this album recently. Because he'd come from Elf, he'd come from Rainbow, he'd come from Sabbath. He's had all this experience at this point. So he got to take everything he knew at this point, you know, it we're calling it a band, but really he was leading the charge in a way. He got to take everything he learned up to this point and put it into a record. He knew exactly what he wanted, and it just came out so perfectly formed, and it's just kick ass. Like from the second Stand Up and Shout kicks in, to the eeriness of Holy Diver, to the kind of moody Don't Talk to Strangers, and one of my favorite Dio songs ever, Straight Through the Heart,
yeah,
with those vocals,
yeah,
and those big Vinny drums. It's just, I'm getting goosebumps thinking about it right now. Like, this record is so special to me because it's one of those things I think of when I think of heavy metal, is I think of Dio, I think of Ozzy, and it's just right in there. Vivian Campbell just crushing on the guitar. Like, Dio got to take everything he ever wanted to do, everything he ever wanted to say, and just blow it all out in one album. And it's phenomenal. It's absolutely phenomenal. Like, it's hard to say enough good things about this one.
It's to say the least. You know, when this record came out, of course, I'd been a fan for a couple of years. I loved the Black Sabbath records. So I was eagerly anticipating this, anxiously anticipating this. Like, what's this going to sound like? You know, what's this new? And then I put on, so I bought the record. And as soon as I put it on the turntable, I'm like, dun, 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 and I'm like, no worries. Any like fears I had, like, you know, was this going to be too light? Was this not going to be good enough? No. And you're right. Talk about a declaration of intent. Ronnie really took the reins, but he knew what he needed to do. And he probably was tired at this point of being pushed around by producers and managers. You know, like he said about his wife, Wendy, she didn't want to be his manager originally because she hadn't had any experience. But she said, well, I'm tired of being screwed by my managers. I want to screw my manager. Ronnie did have a sense of humor, despite what some people might say. Yeah, I mean, like you said, Straight Through the Heart, those with those mad drum fills. Everybody is just playing at such a high level. Jimmy Bain fits right in. You know, he co-wrote some of the songs. I mean, obviously the bulk of the writing was done by Ronnie and Vivian. And, you know, talk about the find of a century with, you know, Vivian Campbell. This guy, you know, went from being kind of a big guy in a British band to being like in an international band. And you're right, Ronnie, you know, yeah, it's a band, but it really is his band. You know, he's calling the shots, he's writing the songs, he's producing them, he's directing the whole thing. But man, the title track, what a groove. And that eerie like keyboard intro that goes on for like a minute and a half. And you know, you've got also Ronnie and Jimmy Bain playing keyboards because they didn't have a keyboard player at this point. Yeah, this is just a killer album. I mean, there's not a bad track on it. I mean, and now I don't know if you ever heard the story about Rainbow in the Dark. What happened?
I did in the documentary. They did. There's a great Dio documentary for anyone that hasn't seen.
Yes,
that is just. I learned so much about him I didn't know, and yeah, I love the story. It's funny that Ronnie didn't like the song and he was going to cut up the tape.
Yeah. I mean, think about it. And then like the band basically was like, no, they were talking them off the ledge, so to speak, you know. And I'm glad they did, because you think about it, that was the first single and video off the record, and it's one of his signature songs. I mean, that's a song that you know, classic rock radio still plays to this day. You know, like I said, the title track, you got Gypsy, you've got like a song like Don't Talk to Strangers, which has this very like melodic, very kind of almost ballad type intro, and he's singing very sweet, you know, really like those honey notes that like they're almost like the singing equivalent of Brad Page on a podcast. See, we always have to mention Brad Page.
Yes, we do.
And we have to pay him royalty now. He's got his lawyers after me. Brad, we love you. Yeah, this is just a killer album. I mean, and you know, the other thing too is like he wasn't afraid to court controversy with that record cover, that album cover, because you look at it, okay, in the background you see Murray, which was the name of their devil mascot, whatever you want to call him, and he's tossing a priest into the river, you know, and he's whipping his chains around. And Dio made a really good point. He goes, well, what makes you think that it's not the other way around, that it's really the devil that's being tossed into the you know, the river? I mean, and of course this was a time when the moral majority in the U.S. was there was a group called the Moral Majority. They were monitoring entertainment for, you know, profanity, Satanism, whatever. And I have no doubt that a lot of kids probably got in a lot of trouble with their parents just for that album cover alone. But it's a striking image. And you can't, you know, especially when you buy it like I did when I bought it on vinyl. You know, those are, there are some albums that even if you don't have a record player, you should probably own the vinyl just so you can admire the artwork. Hell, that you can buy like these little frames now. I would, you know, if I had that still, I would probably put it up on my wall. But yeah, this is a killer, killer album. There's not, like I said, there's not a bad track on it. I mean, interestingly enough, there is a B-side on one of the singles. Actually, it's Holy Diver. I don't know if it came out in the States, but there's a song called Evil Eyes, and this song was actually re-recorded for the next album. So it's kind of interesting. You get like a, I guess it's like almost like a demo in a way. Shame on the Night, you know, Invisible. I mean, Caught in the Middle. I mean, one thing is interesting about the song Invisible. Ronnie said that it was about three characters, and one of them was a gay man, a young gay man who was struggling. And it's like, what kind of balls do you to have in 1983 when there was a fair amount of homophobia? If you think there's homophobia now, there was even worse back then. But yet Ronnie wasn't afraid to tackle it. Ronnie always seemed to go champion the underdog. He always seemed to be the guy because, you know, he, like he said, he was a guy who was short. He was picked on for his height, probably beaten up or, you know, harassed. But yet, you know, started out playing trumpet of all things, and then became a vocalist and became one of the probably the top five heavy metal vocalists of all time. I mean, do you agree with that, Alex?
I do. And you mentioned something I actually wanted to bring up. It seemed like he really was kind of like, especially on these 80s albums, I think kind of he maybe got, I don't want to say he got maybe more cynical as he got older, but there was always hope in these albums. He was always pushing like, you know, there is greatness inside of you. You can pull it out of you. Like, you just have to work for it. You can pull magic out of you because magic can happen every day. Like, that's just such a wonderful thing he was so good at. Like, you listen to these albums and you feel like you can conquer the world. He wanted you to feel that way. But I do think at some point it kind of seemed like, especially like when you get to Strange Highways, which I know we're not talking about today, when you get to Strange Highways, there's a bit of cynicism creeping in. But man, during this time, like, he was building you up.
Yeah, Ronnie really wanted to encourage people to, you know, be what you can be. Don't listen to anybody. Don't take any bullshit. You know, be who you are. You know, I mean, I'm sure there were times in Ronnie's career where people probably told him, "Oh, you're never going to make it. You know, what are you doing?" And yet, look what happened. You know, he went from being in Rainbow and Black Sabbath to having his own band, which was one of the biggest bands of heavy metal. You know, within like a year or two, he was touring stadiums and had one of the biggest, you know, productions. At this point, you know, they don't have a lot of money. So if you see any videos from the Holy Diver tour, it's basically it almost looks like they're around like an ice cave. It almost looks like something out of the Fortress of Solitude in a Superman movie, one of the first. But, you know, you got to remember Ronnie and his wife, Wendy, they were financing everything. They were paying for everything out of their own pocket. And, you know, they didn't have a lot of money at that point. They were determined to make it, that this was going to be do or die. And that record, I mean, I think it probably went gold, you know, it probably went platinum over time, but it was a solid start, more than a solid start. It was a great start. I mean, Ronnie himself once said in an interview that he made three perfect albums, Rainbow Rising, Heaven and Hell, and this one. Who am I to argue with the master?
Yep.
So, okay, I think we've said what we need to say about that record, unless you have anything else you'd like to add, Alex, or
I will just add, like, to me, this is part of an era. 1983 kicks off like my favorite era for metal, because that was the year of Holy Diver. It was the year of Headhunter by Crocus, Pyromania.
Yeah.
Lick It Up. Like, this is like just one of like many great metal classics that came out that year. So yeah, this holds a special place in my heart. Like, this is just like my favorite time for heavy metal.
You left out Peace of Mind by Iron Maiden.
Oh, I did.
That's okay. You know, Bark at the Moon came out later that year. Born Again by Black Sabbath, which, you know, which may or may not be your cup of tea. But that's probably something you could spend a whole podcast talking about, because that's such an outlier in the Black Sabbath catalog. Very divisive, and maybe we'll talk about it at some point. But let's jump ahead to July 2nd, 1984, the second Dio album, The Last in Line. Boy, you know, you thought the first one was good? Well, you know, hold on tight, because it's just going to keep going. Alex, what are your thoughts on The Last in Line?
It's really hard for me to pick whether I like Last in Line or Holy Diver more. Yeah. It really depends on the day. But man, I, again, some of my favorite Dio songs come off this album. The title track, His vocals on that one, again, I'm getting chills thinking about it. Like the slow build, and then when he hits the "We Are Coming Home" part of the song, it just explodes with life. And you know, I remember like as a kid reading interviews with Dio or like reading about him, and he said that, you know, the last line he was wondering about, you know, grew up religiously. I grew up religiously, and he was talking about, you know, the last people to receive judgment. And I thought that was such a chilling concept to write into a song. And so that song really hit me, and it still sticks with me. It's one of my favorites. Mystery,
Yeah.
pop perfection. It's one of Dio's best songs. Like, for as heavy as he knew how to write a hook, and he knew how to write something that would stick with you. And Mystery is one of those songs. I'm surprised that's not more remembered, like Rainbow in the Dark is. I feel like that could have been another radio type of song. And of course, you've got We Rock, I Speed at Night, which, you know, I do. Egypt is great. And another one of my favorites, One Night in the City.
Yeah.
That's like his Bruce Springsteen moment in a way. It's a heavy metal
I
Bruce
never thought of
Springsteen
that.
moment, but he's singing, you know, about the dark child and the princess meeting in the city. It's very Springsteen in a way. So yeah, I'm quite a big fan of this album. Gets a lot of play in my house, and we added Claude Schnell on keyboards.
Yes, yeah. You know, like I said, on the first album, they had Ronnie and Jimmy Bain playing the keyboards, but I guess they realized, you know, for the live show, they needed somebody to play them live. So they added Claude Schnell, and I think he fits right in. I'll admit, you know, when I first heard the record, I bought it, you know, when it came out, and I'll never forget when the last in line came on, he starts singing this soft part. I'm like, what the hell is going on here? Like I don't know why I thought that. And then it's like, we are coming up. And then all of a sudden, like the band just kicks. I'm like, okay. But yeah, We Rock. I mean, come on. You know, you brought up Mystery, which is a song that I love. It was also the second and video and single from the record. Vinny Appice in an interview said he hates that song. It's too pop. It's like, well, I'm sorry, buddy, but I disagree with you. You know,
Yeah.
that's a kill. You're right. Ronnie, for all his, you know, for all his heavyosity, I guess that's the word, he knew how to write a hook. You're right. And he wrote great hooks. I mean, and we're going to see that throughout his career, you know, despite the heavy, you know, angle and the kind of aura that he was trying to project. He wrote good hooks. And you know, you've got other songs like One Night in the City. I never thought about the Springsteen thing. I'm gonna have to like listen to that again and kind of pay close attention to the lyrics. You know, that's an interesting interpretation. I've never heard Dio and Springsteen equated together in the same sentence, but hey. But you know, One Night in the City, you're right, great song. I Speed at Night, you know, nice filler track. Evil Eyes, Eat Your Heart, Egypt. What I like. It, very much like a sort of in the vein of those ballads or those slower paced songs that would end a Black Sabbath record, like particularly like Lonely Is the Word from Heaven and Hell or Over and Over from the Mob Rules. Yeah, you're right. At one time, I think this was my favorite Dio album, but I've changed my mind as you know, as I think when you listen to certain records over the years, especially as you get older. Because, you know, I am your father, Alex. I have to say that every episode because Alex is a youngin' to me. But that's why I like having you on the show because it's, you know, a great perspective. You get to hear a lot of this stuff after the fact. But yeah, this is a great album. The album cover is great. Murray, once again, kind of emerging before this. The colors on that album are so captivating. You know, like it's almost like a sunset or a sunrise. Yeah, this record, according, I'm just looking this up on Wikipedia. It was certified gold on September 12th, 1984, which is not long after it was released, and it was the first Dio album to be certified platinum. Which, strangely enough, didn't happen until 1987. But you know,
Wow.
yeah. Well, you know, Dio was the funny thing about the Dio band. As much as they were very influential and very popular with metal fans and all that, they never really were that big in terms of like mega platinum sales. But you know, back then, if you sold gold records every time or platinum, whatever, the record companies would generally just kind of keep you on and leave it. It's not like now where, well, I mean, now records don't sell, but there was a point where the record companies only wanted people that were selling like a million or more. They wanted mega platinum, but
Right.
Dio always delivered. They were one of the most consistent bands. And they also released a video from this tour called A Special from the Spectrum. Which is
Yep.
kind of interesting. I was on VHS, of course, at the time, and it was like $29.98, which I think in today's money is probably like $70, you know. But you
Yeah.
know, people, and the thing about it that it's only like an hour long. they didn't even include like the whole concert, like, which is kind of BS because VHS tapes could hold up to 2 hours, so you could have at least had all or most of the concert. I mean, just cut out the bits where they leave the stage or something. I don't know, but yeah, this is a, you know, boy, he's hitting. I mean, think about the fact that this album comes out just a little more than a year after the first one, Holy Diver. 2 years in a row, bang, bang, bang. He, you know, him and that band, Vivian and Vinny and Jimmy and now, of course, Claude. It's just a well-oiled machine, and I think they really click on this album. Vivian is just blazing away. Vinny's, that's just this band. They're blazing away, and they're going on all fours. You know, I don't know what else to say about this album, really. I mean, I could go on and just rave about it, but I think, you know, that says it all. Alex, do you have anything else you'd want to say about Last in Line?
I will say it's one of my favorite metal albums again. And also I do think this is, even though the next line album has the same lineup, this is the beginning of the end of an era in a way.
Yeah.
I think things start to break down a little bit, as we'll discuss in a second, but, man, here everything is still, everybody's still happy, everybody's still firing on all cylinders, like you said. Like, this is a hell of a record, and it like Last in Line and Holy Diver, like, they're like neck and neck. So yeah, love it.
Absolutely. So we jump ahead another year to August 12th, 1985, and the release of Sacred Heart. Like the previous two, it's produced by Ronnie, but there's Trouble in Paradise, and I you know, it depends on who you talk to. Vivian has said that at the beginning, you know, they were kind of like hired guns, but they were promised that by the third record or something like that, they would be getting a percentage, like they would get a stake in the band. Maybe not an equal percentage, but they would get like a stake, you know, in the band and be entitled to, you know, revenues from the touring and merchandising and whatever they sell. Well, apparently, according to Vivian, Ronnie never shared this info with his wife, Wendy, who tried to basically tell him, no, nobody's getting a percentage. You know, you're hired guns. And so I do feel like you can kind of feel it on this record. It's a good record. I love Sacred Heart. But compared to the first two, it's a bit lacking. And there's some tracks to me where there's repetition, where it almost, you can recall tracks from the first album or the second album. And Alex, why don't you talk a little about your thoughts on Sacred Heart?
Yeah, I like this one a bit too, but it's not as, like, there's a tension to this album. Like, you can kind of feel it in the playing. It's not as loose, but I do feel like this is an album that it usually kind of gets the shaft, but I do think it's better than most people want to give it credit for. It's not as good as the first two, but I think it's a really good album. And I remember, like, I was talking about my first Dio album was that Beast of Dio compilation. The songs from this album that ended up on there, again, they were some of my favorite Dio songs. King of Rock and Roll.
Yeah.
What a crushing opener that is. What
it's
a
not live,
song.
By the way.
No, it's not. I kind of expected when I listened to Intermission this week that I was going to hear the same thing, and you could tell it's not. You could tell a clear difference, but man, what a great opener. I think like the beat of a heart, that's a great underrated deep cut. I think it's such a cool song. Rock and Roll Children, one of my favorite Dio singles, and I remember seeing the video a lot as a kid on VH1 Classic. That one sticks with me. The title cut is just, again, one of Dio's best epics, and I love, like, the whole Dungeons and Dragons, you know, in the forest, the sword fight that he would do on stage. That was so cool. And Hungry for Heaven, great song that ended up on the Vision Quest soundtrack. Again, another popish number, but still a cool tune. But there is a little bit of filler here. I'm not a big fan of Shoot Shoot. I think that's kind of a weak track. And Fallen Angel's all right. But, like, The Beat of a Heart's really good. Another Lie's really good. But you can tell that there's some unhappiness here. And I was watching an interview with Dio before we started. Actually, he said that he felt like he had to pull stuff out of Vivian for this album. Like, it was a difficult record to make. But definitely worth checking out still.
Yeah, I mean, you can hear it, like you said, and I also have to wonder, like, how much, a thing that might have contributed to it was the fact that they were on that cycle of album tour. I mean, I don't think these guys took any vacations. I think it was just record an album, go on tour, go back in the studio, and with that kind of a pace, it's going to catch up with you. But when you combine the fact that maybe there's some dissension within the band, Vivian's not happy, maybe the other guys aren't happy. But yeah, there are some great songs. I mean, King of Rock and Roll, come on, what a kick-ass song. you know, it really starts the album off right. Sacred Heart, very dramatic, very, you know, theatrical. But of course, that's Ronnie. Of course, everything he does is theatrical. And man, did they do a stage show that really did it just. I mean, the album may not have been as great, but the stage show was great. And what's great about that is they put it out a year later. Of course, by this point, they'd replaced after the first leg of the tour, Vivian was fired and they brought in Craig Goldie. And that's when they filmed a video called Sacred Heart, the video. Again, it's another one of these things. It's on VHS for like $30, $70 in today's money. I think it's like an hour long. The great thing is it's been reissued on Blu-ray, the full concert called, you know, Finding the Sacred Heart. It's the whole show. It's like an hour and 45 minutes or something like that. But yeah, this album, I mean, Hunger for Heaven, yeah, that was released. I'm not sure if it's the same version that appeared on the soundtrack. I think it may have been re-recorded. I'm not sure. I have to listen to the soundtrack version. But it doesn't matter. I'm sure it's not that much different. Rock and Roll Children was a song that the rock stations were playing a lot back then. You know, it was the single. And, you know, very dramatic, you know, when someone slammed the door, bang. And, of course, in the live version, he says, bang. That's when they set off a pyrotechnic blast that probably rocked the hall and probably made a few people go deaf. But, yeah, this is – it's a good record. I mean, you know, you can hear the fatigue setting in. You know, there's some dissension. But even so – they still managed to pull some great stuff out of it. I mean, I think I would say it's probably more of a front-loaded album in that some of the better songs are on side one, because this is back, you know, when albums were the ruling thing, and even cassettes had two sides. I didn't have a CD player at this point, so I wasn't listening to albums like I would listen to albums in terms of side one and side two. I still hear them that way. Classic albums. The album cover is great. Murray, of course, is once again in his full glory. And again, yeah, Sacred Heart. I mean, I know, in fact, a friend of mine whose mom was, we called her the church lady because she was a really devout Catholic. And I think she got a little up in arms over this Dio record called Sacred Heart. Because I think the church they might have went to might have been the Sacred Heart. There was a Sacred Heart church. Needless to say, there was no Dio played at this church, I'm sure. But yeah, it's a good record. Is it a great record? No, but you know, they all can't be killers. And, you know, this is sad. Unfortunately, this is the last album to feature the original lineup because Vivian, as we, you know, discussed, he's fired in the middle of the tour. You know, I guess for whatever reason, he's putting too much of a stink about his compensation, which, you know, I mean, I don't really know too much about that. I just know what he said and what Ronnie said. And unfortunately, it's too bad, like, they didn't resolve their differences before Ronnie died. I mean, I know, like, he was on good terms with the guys in Black Sabbath because they'd reformed as Heaven and Hell. But, you know, there's a video, and you may have seen this. It's from, like, 2007 where Ronnie Dio is outside a – I think it was outside a show. And he's signing autographs for fans, and someone brings up Vivian Campbell. And, man, Ronnie just went off and said, you know – I'm not going to repeat what Ronnie said – but it's like, man, Ronnie was not – like, Ronnie is funny. I've seen him in interviews when he talks about previous band members. He's always – whenever he does an official interview, he's always very diplomatic about it and always complimentary. But, man, he was not – you've seen the video, right? You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I saw that, like, really – I saw that before he passed even, and I was, like, shocked. Like, that was early YouTube days, and I was like, whoa, he's going off on him, like, so hard.
One of my gripes about – my very few gripes about the Dio documentary was that they didn't interview Vivian Campbell.
Yeah.
Well, they should have interviewed him and included – even the Eagles, when they did their documentary, included some interview footage with Don Felder about his departure from the band. It would have been nice to have heard Ronnie's side. Wendy could have stepped in and kind of said what she needed to say on Ronnie's behalf or her behalf. But like I said, it's just too bad they never resolved the differences, and maybe they could have worked. And, you know, now, of course, Vivian has a side band called Last in Line with Vinny. Jimmy Bain was in the band until his unfortunate passing in 2016, but they're still going. And, you know, I kind of thought that was weird given how he claimed he didn't like Ronnie, he didn't really like heavy metal, but who knows with these guys. We jump ahead a year to 1986, the summer of 1986, June 1986, for the live EP intermission. This is a kind of strange release because it's kind of almost too long to be considered an EP. It's almost like a half hour long, I think, or around a half hour. Yet it's not long enough to be an album. And I don't really, and there's, of course, a new track on it, which we'll discuss. But I don't know why at this point they just didn't release a double album, you know, or at least a full single album, because they had enough songs. I mean, between the three Dio Band albums at this point, and of course they were doing stuff from Rainbow and Black Sabbath. So I've never understood. This was obviously just a stopgap release because they needed to kind of, I guess, you know, they were touring extensively. This was actually, and weirdly enough, we talked about how on the Sacred Heart tour, on the second leg of the tour, which this would be released during, they would come out with a record, a video called Sacred Heart, which was featuring, of course, Craig Goldie, who replaced it. But on this album or this EP, what's that? Craig Goldie of Rough Cut. You're right. Yeah, I forgot about that. Yeah. This, as far as I know, this record was recorded on the first leg with Vivian. Of course, he's not credited, and if you look at the picture on the back of the Intermission EP, it's a picture of the band with Craig Goldie, which, I mean, I guess makes sense in one respect. They are on the new song, but it's certainly an interesting record, and I was kind of, what are your thoughts on Intermission, Alex?
So this is an album, like I was kind of talking about earlier, it's eluded me for a long time, but I did go and listen to it on YouTube in preparation for this, and like you said, I've always been kind of curious about this one because, like you said, it's too long to be an EP, really. But they could have made this much longer. I'm sure they had the material to do so. But I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it. Dio sounds great here. It's a great kick-ass band. Opening with King of Rock and Roll, so cool. Sacred Heart sounds really good. I love the medley on here. I think the medley is great of Rock and Roll Children, Long Live Rock and Roll, and Man on the Silver Mountain. And the new track, Time to Burn, it was interesting. I thought that was going to be a little heavier than it was, but it's this very kind of almost AOR type of song, but it's still pretty cool. I liked it. I have a funny story, actually, relating to this. Like, I keep referencing the Beast of Dio compilation. That was my intro to Dio. The only song from Intermission that was on there was they took Man on the Silver Mountain from the medley and put it on there. And Man on the Silver Mountain is really sped up in this live recording. And many years later, I would get the first Rainbow album where you have the original Man on the Silver Mountain, and it's much slower. And it really was really confusing to me for a long time. It took me quite a while to get used to that tempo on the original Man on the Silver Mountain, because in my brain it should be the tempo on Intermission that's a little faster.
Right.
But yeah, it's an interesting release.
Dio would always speed up Man on the Silver Mountain. I guess it's like that live thing where you've got the adrenaline pumping through your veins and you don't want to, you know, I it was a similar experience where I'd heard it here first and then later I heard the Dio. I love the Rainbow version off the Ritchie Blackmore's Rainbow album, but this is an interesting album. I read something, and I don't know if this is true, and I would hope to think it wasn't true. Supposedly, Craig Goldie did some guitar overdubs on the live material, which I don't think that was true. That, you know, it's one thing, you know, you fire Vivian, and admittedly, like, the guitar on this album does sound a little mixed back, maybe because they couldn't get Vivian in to record overdubs or to fix it. I like it. I think it's a good record, but I really, in retrospect, especially when you consider that the full concert has been released on Blu-ray, why not release a double live album, you know, or add another song to it to make it 40 minutes long, whatever. But yeah, I like Time to Burn. I think it's a very good song. It is more of a pop song, more of an AOR song. But again, Ronnie wrote great hooks. There's another song, too, that I wanted to mention that was not on any Dio records prior to this. It was released on the Iron Eagle soundtrack in 1985 called Hide in the Rainbow, which is a pretty good song. And I'm presuming that Vivian must be on it, because I don't think Craig Goldie makes his recording debut as far as like full album till, you know, the next one. But it's a good song. I think like Intermission, it's obviously just something to put out there because they weren't going to have an album out. Maybe, you know, their contracts specified they had to have an album out every year. And, you know, they wanted to feed the beast, so to speak, the beast being the corporate record company that was, you know, funding their adventures. So, you know, they put this out. It's interesting that it came out on vinyl in the U.S., but never has been issued on CD. Now, you have two options. If you're lucky like me, you'll run into a used copy really cheap someday, which you may or may not. There's also a deluxe edition of Sacred Heart where they include the entire Intermission EP on the bonus disc. Sounds great. You know, it's remastered. It came out in like 2010, 2011, something like that. Recommend it if you can find it. Yeah, I could see where you would have trouble finding this, Alex, because like I said, this, you know, this obviously was came out. I didn't even have a CD player at that point. I was still buying vinyl. So it was a new release, and it was, you know, it was kind of cool. Long Live Rock. I'm gonna disagree with you though on one thing. I think this is the first time we've disagreed on anything. But I don't care for the medley thing. Dio did this, and he did it with his own stuff too, where, you know, he'd start doing one song and then he'd go into another and then he'd come back and do the original song and maybe in between mix in one or two others. I was never crazy about that. I prefer to hear songs in their entirety. And this started with Black Sabbath on the Live Evil album, where Heaven and Hell starts off and then it trails off and he does Mob Rules and he comes back and it kind of weaves in and out of Heaven and Hell, even to the point when they do Paranoid as the last song of the set, the final encore, I guess. Like, so they really milk Heaven and Hell for all it's worth. But yeah, it is interesting when you hear the original version of Man on the Silver Mountain, and it's so much slower. My cousin was in a cover band at one point years ago, and I went to see him one night, and he did that song, and I complimented him because he performed it at the original tempo. You know, they kept it like. But like I said, I think it's just adrenaline, and you know, I think that's also got Long Live Rock and Roll on it, if I'm not mistaken. And I think Rainbow in the Dark was on there as well, which, you know, makes sense because that was probably one of the closest things they had to a hit single. And of course, it ends with We Rock. Yeah, this is, I'm just looking at the length of 34:20. So, you know, by some standards, especially like in the 60s and the 70s, this actually is more or less the length of a full album. They could
Oh,
have
yeah.
put one more song on and just made it 40 minutes long, but whatever. It's a good little stopgap. It kind of kept things going along. That in the video, which I, you know, like I said, if it came out back then, it was probably like $29.95 in 1985 money, which is like $65, $70 in today's money, which is crazy. But I'm sure people bought it and enjoyed it. And, you know, it's all you can ask for. You have any other thoughts on intermission, Alex?
A fascinating little slice of a stopgap, and yeah, I'm going. My hunt continues for a physical copy of this one. I enjoyed listening to
Well, I hope your quest yields fruit, and you'll have to share that with us on the group page and everything when you find that holy grail, so to speak.
Almost definitely.
It's out there. You'll find one.
Oh, yeah.
So with that, we jump ahead to July 21st, 1987, and the release of Dream Evil, produced by Ronnie, of course, as always. And this, of course, is the first studio album to have a new member. You know, as we know, Vivian was let go during Sacred Heart tour. They bring in Craig Goldie from Rough Cut, and Ronnie had become friends with him, and obviously, you know, when you need a guitar player, you probably figure, well, I know this guy who's looking for a gig or, you know, whatever. And he hired him and they produced this album. Actually, I'll let you talk first and then I'll offer my thoughts. But so what are your thoughts, Alex, on Dream Evil?
Like the eternal phoenix rising from the ashes, they only came back stronger, I think. I think this is a much better album than Sacred Heart.
Yes.
Highly overrated, sorry, highly underrated and very overlooked, in my opinion. There's Dio sounds so much more focused and fresh here. Songs like Dream Evil, just crushing, like mid-tempo songs. Sunset Superman's a great epic. All the Fools Sailed Away, kind of in the tradition of like Children of the Sea and Don't Talk to Strangers. Such a beautiful ballad-esque song. All the Fools Sailed Away, one probably my favorite on the album. I love Faces in the Window, When a Woman Cries. Like this is the band reborn and the band on fire again. Night People is a great opener as well. It's just kind of it's unfortunate that this one didn't do quite as well as the others did. Like definitely after Sacred Heart, there was the bit of a commercial drop off, unfortunately. But what a great album. There was no quality drop off here.
I agree. This album was a definite upgrade in quality all around. I mean, the band sounds revitalized. Craig Goldie fits in really well, although I guess some of the band members didn't agree with that sentiment, but we'll get into that after we kind of talk about the music. Yeah, Night People, dun, 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 those keyboard stabs at the beginning, Kolachno really kind of making his presence known. The title track, which is just killer. It's just, it really does feel like Evil. And that album cover, I mean, that album cover could be like out of a Stephen King novel. You know, here's this poor little kid lying on a bed and Murray's outside. So you know that no good is going to come of this. Sunset Superman. Which, you know, I'm surprised DC Comics didn't sue them over the use of the, you know, Superman name. But, yeah, well, there was a song by Donovan called Sunset Superman. I forget the name of it. Anyway, yeah, All the Fools, so a really epic ballad, you know, Naked in the Rain, you know, Could Have Been a Dream, which is another single. And the band was really, I think this, you know, let me put it to you this way. I prefer Vivian as a guitar player. I think the original band is the best, but I think Craig Goldie commits himself very well here. And I would take this album over Sacred Heart any day. League's better. The band is revitalized. You know, Craig Goldie was probably very happy to be there and, you know, yes, sir. No, sir. Mr. D, I'll do whatever you want. And, you know, Ronnie was back, you know, they had a chance, maybe they had a chance to relax a little and regenerate a little after the drama of the Sacred Heart tour. Yeah, you're right. This album was not as big as the previous ones. It didn't really, I don't even know if it went gold or not, which is a shame because it's a really good album. I mean, I think people who were there at the time, like myself, we loved it. We ate it up. I mean, this was like, you know, Dio was just delivering the goods constantly. You know, there was a 2-year gap. And like I said, they regenerated, they revived themselves. The album cover art is great. The songs are killer. The playing is good. But in doing some reading, Martin Popoff has written a couple of books about Dio. And I guess Jimmy Bain did not mix well with Craig Goldie. They didn't play well. I guess for whatever reason, they think their personalities clashed. And what's significant is that after the tour ended, the Dio band pretty much falls apart. Because as we know, when the next record comes out in 1990, 3 years, by the way, that's a big gap between records for a band at that time. Dio, when Dio comes back, he's going to come back with an entirely new band. Even Vinny's going to be gone. And not much has been said about this, but I think there might also have been some disgruntlement, like with maybe Vinny or Jimmy, over the compensation factor that they weren't getting what they were promised, or maybe they felt they were entitled to more. I don't know. I can't really comment on that, but it just seems a shame that over the course of, like, you know, a couple of tours, the band just kind of falls apart because they were making great music. And I would like to have seen what this lineup would have done with another studio album or two. But as we're going to find out, you know, there's going to change as a constant in the Dio universe. And when the 90s comes, it's even going to be more dramatic in terms of not just the personnel, but the music. But I think Dream Evil is a solid kind of end of the decade album. We didn't know at the time, of course. You know, Dio, this is their magic period. And this is, to me, this is kind of like the end of an era in a way, the end of the classic era. This isn't the original band, but it's, you know, it's mostly the original band. Claude Chanel is still there, Vinny, you know, Jimmy Bain. But, you know, as we know with rock and roll bands, as time wears on, egos get frayed. People don't always get along. People don't always play nice. And, you know, you can maintain a facade for a certain period of time, but eventually, you know, you can't even, you know, fake it anymore. But we got 4 great studio albums from the Dio in the 80s. And I mean, this really established Ronnie as a force to be reckoned with on his own. He's independent of Richie Blackmore and Rainbow and Tony Iommi and Geezer Butler and Black Sabbath. He's standing on his own, and he doesn't have to justify himself to anybody. He's built up his own fan base. Wendy, you know, you can say what you want. You can say she's like Sharon, or she's this, or she's that, or she was, you know, but she took care of him. I mean, she really made sure that he got promoted. And I don't think I've seen any footage from, I don't think they filmed any videos for this on the Dream Evil tour, but I'm sure whatever Ronnie and Wendy came up with was epic. I'm sure it was, you know, a display to be reckoned with. I mean, you know, there's a lot of competition for theatrical stage shows back in the 80s. I mean, you had Kiss, who were a little, had kind of neutered themselves a little in terms of the stage set, but yet Iron Maiden doing these really killer stage shows. So, you know, Dio had a lot of competition, but, you know, he didn't have to bow to anybody. He was the master. And I'm really glad that I was around during that time to witness this, to see him, you know, to go from, oh my God, he's looked like Sabbath, what's going to happen to, well, I guess he's okay without them. I mean, I think, you know, they suffered without him a little bit after that, because they kind of, Black Sabbath, as we both know, kind of becomes a revolving door and kind of directionless at this point. But that's a subject for another podcast. I mean, Black Sabbath alone, you could do multiple podcasts based on their history and their. But I guess, you know, Dio in the 80s really established themselves, and I say as a band, especially that original lineup with Vivian, because it still holds up. I can still listen to any of these albums or any of these songs and still get a charge, still get pumped up when I'm riding in my car. Crank that mother up.
Oh, hell yeah. Yeah, this is that four-album run is, it's perfection. And it's a very special time in music, I think. Like, because for me, like, I'm not to sound like there's no good music after the 80s or 90s, but for me, like, heavy metal really, like, that's my favorite time for heavy metal music, is this time period, and those four albums kind of have that sound just down perfectly. So yeah, I know exactly what you mean. I still get goosebumps when Stand Up and Shout comes on.
Well, you know, at this time, of course, hair metal is really kind of emerging as a big four. Well, no one has ever classed Ronnie James Dio or Dio or Black Sabbath as hair metal. This was goth. This was gothic stuff. I mean, this was epic. You know, we joke about it, but, you know, Dio made it okay to have Dungeons and Dragons and heavy metal. You know, he wrote about castles and women and, you know, all these. I mean, I'm surprised Dio didn't do the soundtrack to like a Highlander type movie. I mean, Queen obviously did that.
Yeah.
But it would have been cool if like Ronnie James Dio had done the soundtrack to some like medieval quest movie. That would have been like epic. You know, you just have this, you know, the guitars kicking in. And but, you know, I mean, he did do Hide in the Rainbow for Iron Eagle and Hungry for Heaven for Vision Quest. So he was definitely putting his, you know, his music out there. And I imagine it must have been pretty cool in a movie theater to be watching a movie and all of a sudden Dio comes on and it's cranking up over the Dolby sound system, you know. My only regret about Ronnie, and this is just about Ronnie James Dio in general, is that I never saw him live when he was around.
Really?
No. Wow. You know, when he got back with Black Sabbath on As Heaven and Hell in the later years, they were touring so much that I said, oh, I'll go see him next year. And then next year came and Ronnie got, you know, as we know, he got cancer and he died. And, you know, to my eternal regret, I never saw Dio in any incarnation. I mean, I was too young to have seen him in Rainbow or, but I, you know, I think back, why didn't I go see him on the Dehumanizer tour when they hit Boston? Or why didn't I go to Heaven and Hell? Or even one of his solo tours, because, you know, he toured a lot. He was on the road a lot. And he did do a Holy Diver live record where he performs the whole record. This is before people were doing that. And I've seen some video of it. He filmed it for a DVD release as well. And it's good. It's certainly well played, but it's not the original musicians. And I don't think Dio ever recreated the chemistry of that original band. He had some great players, don't get me wrong. He always had the, like I said, when you're running James Dio, you get the best of the best and you command excellence. But that original band just had such a great chemistry. Vivian was like, nobody knew about Vivian Campbell before that. You know, he was not in America anyway. You know, we all knew about Jimmy and of course Vinny because of Rainbow and Black Sabbath. But this was just a merging of musicians. I mean, you know, Dio, yeah, he was leading the charge. He was the fearless leader, and he was just, the band was in his name because, like he said, they can't fire me from a band called Dio. But it really was a band. It really was a unit of, and Ronnie always kind of tried to emphasize that. He never thought of it as a solo project or his solo thing. It was always a band, you know, and I suppose, you know, he wanted to put off the image that they were a band. Regardless, it's in the grooves. You know that, Alex.
Oh, yeah. It's in the grooves.
You put these records on, you're pumped. You just want to thresh. You know, I'm doing the, of course, the horn, the double horns hand gesture that Ronnie, he didn't, you know, by the way, Ronnie never said he invented it. What he said was that he learned it from his grandmother as a kid, and he he was like the first one to popularize. Now, Gene Simmons does a similar hand gesture, but it's not exactly the same. It looks kind of similar, but it's not. It's more like a sign. Like Gene is doing the sign language gesture, although I don't think he realized it, for I love you, where Ronnie is just like, it's supposed to thwart off evil spirits or demons. And of course, every nervous Nelly in the Bible Belt who saw that back in the 80s thought that these kids were, it was like a demonic hand gesture. And of course, everybody does that now. I mean, to the point where it's like, it's being done at Britney Spears concerts or, you know, whatever, or especially at hard rock concerts, but, you know, Aussie concerts, I'm sure. But, you know, Ronnie definitely, there's a million pictures of Ronnie doing that gesture. And he just, he does it with authority. Like I said before, Alex, he may have been a short man. I think he was like barely 5 foot tall, if that. But man, he might as well have been 10 foot tall. He was a giant. He had a presence. He had the vocal range. And, you know, even in his later years, his voice dropped a bit, which is, you know, which happens with age.
Yeah.
But it still had range. It still had power. You know, Ozzy, on the other hand, you know, I've heard there's stories where with Ozzy, it's kind of hit or miss whether or not he's going to sound good on a given night. In fact, we were talking about earlier about how Speak of the Devil came out, the live album. I was listening to a Black Sabbath podcast called Into the Void, which is a great show, by the way. They were talking about the bootlegs of the Speak of the Devil. So I went and sought those out on YouTube. You know, something? I'm not going to condemn him for re-recording the vocals in the studio because, man, Ozzy's vocals, I love Ozzy, but man, his vocals are all over the place. Up and down, not very rarely, if ever, on pitch. And you know, you can tell when you listen to it, they double tracked it. And that's, you know, we'll talk about Ozzy some other time, obviously. I mean, there's a lot of ground to talk about with these guys, you know, Dio, Sabbath, Ozzy. I mean, they, you know, first being in that band and then the kind of the offshoot bands. But I'll tell you, you know, you can't go wrong with any of these records. Buy, like, if you want a compilation, get the very Beast of Dio. There's other Dio compilations out there as well. But if you really want to delve into it, get Holy Diver and just go from there.
Absolutely. And if you want some more live stuff from the era we talked about, like just last year, Dio at Donington 83,
yeah,
Dio at Donington 87, both got reissued. Those are fantastic. Those are worth checking out.
Those were actually on the same release when they first came out in 2010.
I remember that.
It was a two CD set. So I didn't get these because there's nothing new for me. And just so you know, also, and I'm sure you're aware of this, Alex, last year they came out with the Holy Diver box set.
Yep.
And it's got I think CD1 is like the remaster. CD2 is this remix, which is, you know, it's pretty decent. It's not bad. And then you have like a live CD from that era. And then you have like a CD of some outtakes. I kind of looked at it and thought, in terms of what I want, I just, if I saw it really cheap, I might buy it. But yeah. It just didn't really have, I mean, two of the CDs of the Holy Diver album in like two different mixes. So it's kind of like, you know, I can listen to that on the internet. I mean, I think it's, you know, if you're a real, I mean, I do consider myself to be a hardcore fan, but not so much that I want to get it, but it's out there if you want it. And, you know, I'm sure the remaster sounds good. But, you know, the only thing is in this country that we don't actually have any like remasters of Dio in this country, which is strange. You have to get like the special editions, the deluxe editions, the two CD sets from Universal in Europe, which may cost you a chunk of change, but worth it. You know, like I said, you get those original albums, you get all the B-sides and bonus tracks and the intermission EP. And, you know, but I would recommend anybody, if you really want to hear some great metal from this era, get Holy Diver through Dream Evil. I don't have much more to say about that, Alex. I can't really rave too much more about this record.
Yeah, it's a hell of a run. It's a hell of a band. It's a wonderful era. It's kind of like part one of Dio, if you will. And then part two starts with Lock Up the Wolves and runs through Master of the Moon.
Absolutely. Alex, where can my listeners find you on the internet? And what are you working on right now?
You can find me at the Sly Dog Music Cast. I talk about music from all different eras. Right now I'm working on a David Lee Roth solo album by album that's coming up. Also, Brad and I, Brad, shout out again, are setting the dates for our super massive Todd Rundgren solo in the 70s episodes. It's probably going to end up being a four-part series.
Nice.
Like if you're a fan of the Pods and Sods Network, I'm very much modeling it off of Craig and Brian's McCartney in the 70s. run. So I'm really pumped for that.
I'm looking forward to it too.
All kinds of good things coming down the pipe.
Excellent. And once again, Alex, thank you for stepping up and sharing your thoughts with me on Ronnie James Dio in the 80s. And I'm sure at some point, once again, we'll be talking about something else.
Yep. And I've got plans to, I won't tell the listeners here what's going on, but I've got an idea to have you on my show, which we can talk about a little bit.
I love doing other podcasts because once I've done my part, I can just let you do the post-production. Yep. I'm sorry, but you know how it is when you have to spend hours and hours editing, a podcast and getting it, after a while, it's like, okay, I've heard our voices a million times. I don't need to hear it again. But, you know, the funny thing about that is as much as I put into it, if I hear it somehow later on, I'll think, oh, I didn't remember saying that. Or did Alex say that?
Yeah.
Anyway, thanks once again for listening to Mr. K's Super Show. And we hope you liked our retrospective of the Dio band in the 80s. Share with us your thoughts on our Facebook page. And don't forget to give Alex's Sly Dog Music Cast a listen. It's well worth it. He knows his stuff, and it's like he said, it's by the fans for the fans, so you can't beat that. So with that, we'll see you on the next episode of Mr. K's Super Show. Take care, everybody.
Later.
You've been listening to Mr. K's Super Show. If you like what you heard, please write a review on Apple Podcasts and share it on Facebook, Twitter, or whatever social media you like. Thank you for listening to Mr. K's Super Show.